The man who reminded me of Rusty was bending over in the frozen food section of the supermarket, rummaging in a freezer. As I walked down the aisle towards him, he straightened, a carton of ice cream in his hands, and the resemblance struck me like a slap. Slim almost to the point of gauntness, long stick-like limbs, hair sandy and unkempt. He glanced at me, frowning, and I saw the dissimilarities. Eyes brown, not green, and too far apart, jaw too weak, nostrils flared, not pinched. I looked away, pretending to examine the frozen fish, shaken, not so much by the resemblance, but by the jolt it had given me. The memory of Rusty had faded to the back of my mind like the recollection of a recipe or old girlfriend's phone number or anything else insignificant. Yet he was the man who had changed my life. Although Rusty didn't teach me until I reached the sixth form, I'd heard the rumours. Rowdy classes, ineffective teaching methods, indifferent manner, and whispers about a wife killed by a drunken driver. His name was Edward James. I had to plumb the shadowy depths of my mind to pluck that out, because I always knew him, and remembered him to the extent that my traitorous memory allowed, as Rusty. It's what every kid in school called him, on account of his unruly mane of hair lending him a vague similarity to the animated character Mr. Rusty from that wacky old children's program, The Magic Roundabout. We didn't call him Rusty to his face, of course. School kids can be cruel when running in a herd, but tend to have strong instincts of individual self-preservation. Though, since I've started thinking about him again, it's occurred to me that he was unlikely to have thrown a wobbly, as we used to say, if someone had called him Rusty to his face. He was too distant, too preoccupied. Being addressed by a childish name would not have registered high on his list of things to get annoyed about. Besides, Rusty was tame compared to some of the nicknames given to his teaching colleagues. There was nothing distant about his teaching style. His lessons were different. He once spent an hour bouncing a ping-pong ball on his desk. "Does it stop there?" He jabbed a spindly finger at the ball as it reached the top of its bounce and started its descent. His eyes gleamed as he turned to us, giving lie to the rumour about his indifference. "So? Did the ball stop? Come on, think. In the instant before it started to fall, did it stop?" The silence was spoiled only by the ball rat-tat-tatting to a halt on the desk. Rusty stared at us, and we stared back, until Matthew Stiles, the class SWAT, raised his hand. "Sir, the ball didn't stop. It curved." "Excellent," said Rusty. "The ball described a parabola." Those of us who weren't Matthew Stiles and had never heard of a parabola made faces and shrugged at each other. "But supposing," continued Rusty, "that the ball bounced upwards in a straight line and then fell along precisely the same path. In that instant before it started to fall, would it stop? Would it float?" And he was off again, eyes aglint, bouncing the ball on the desk, pointing excitedly as it rose and fell.